This week's Parsha, Parshas Vayechi, deals with the blessings that Yaakov Avinu gave to all of his children. I'd like to try to focus with God's help this year on the bracha of the first child of the Bechor of Reuven. If we take a look at the Chumash, the Torah tells us, Reuven, you are my firstborn, my strength, and my initial vigor, foremost in rank and foremost in power. Water-like impetuosity, you cannot be foremost, because you mounted your father's bed, then you desecrated him, with a capital H, who ascended my couch. I'd like to try to understand, what was exactly Reuven's sin? What did Reuven do wrong? How do Chazal, how do our rabbis understand the act of Reuven? What is the basis of the understanding of our rabbis? And then to really try to understand together, what is this quality trait of pachas kamayim, of this unstable like water that Reuven is being described as? What exactly is this quality trait, and how do we understand this quality trait vis-a-vis our own lives, and how we can deal with this character trait that's found within ourselves? And I think we also need to understand, perhaps first and foremost, is how is this really a bracha? This is a description of Reuven as my strength, my initial vigor. And instead of giving him a blessing, it seems to be a criticism of the personality of Reuven. How are we to understand that within the larger perspective that this parsha deals with the brachos, the final blessings that Yaakov Avinu gave his children before he died? So we need to understand the placement of this in terms of how it's a blessing, and then to understand the personality of Reuven and what Reuven was all about and the character traits that are found inherent within Reuven. To explain and to perhaps understand a little bit more deeply how we can understand this to be a blessing when it seems to really be a criticism, unlike the other Shvatim, like Yehuda, where you have the blessing that held the Malchus, how do we understand this to be a blessing? I think can really be understood in terms of looking at the entire context where these blessings are given. Right before this verse, verses 1 and 2, in this chapter, we have, then Yaakov called for his sons and said, assemble yourselves and I will tell you what will befall you in the end of days. Gather yourselves and listen, O sons of Yaakov, and listen to Israel your father. And then begins the bracha of Reuven. As we know, as Rashi tells us, the Medrash tells us that Yaakov Avinu wished to reveal the Kates, the final time and the final redemption. But it was concealed from him, so instead he blessed it. And that's what it means, so assemble yourselves and I'll tell you what befall you in the end of days. And instead of finding out what happened in the end of days, rather we find gather yourselves and listen, and we have the blessings. So Rashi tells us that initially he wanted to reveal the Kate, but he was unable to do so, so he blessed them. How do we have to understand this? Why didn't Yaakov Avinu reveal the Kate? Why indeed did he instead bless them? Rabbi Leff in Outlets and Insights, to explain this, brings another Medrash. And the Medrash says that the letters Chet and Tet do not appear in the names of the various tribes, because no Chet, which means no sin or deficiency, is to be found in their names. And that's why Yaakov thought to reveal the end of days to them. But he also saw that the letters Kuf and Tzadik, forming the word Kates, also do not appear in their names, and therefore he changed his mind. How do we understand this Medrash? So he brings one final Medrash, and with this we can understand what's going on in our parsha. There's a Medrash which gives a following analogy. A confidant of the king was dying and calls his children to his bedside to reveal the royal secrets that the king had confided to him. Before he began, however, he saw that the king was also standing at his bedside. He immediately substituted an exhortation to his children to be careful to honor the king properly instead of his intended message. Similarly, Yaakov wished to reveal the secrets of Mashiach, but saw the Shechin at his bedside and out of embarrassment substituted the blessings. This Medrash, as well as the previous one, seemed to imply that the case was not forgotten by Yaakov Avinu, but rather suppressed. How do Yaakov Avinu's blessings compare, we also need to understand, with the exhortation to obey the king and honor him as found in this Medrash? So Rabbi Leff suggests, and I think this is the basis to understanding Reuven and quite of the number of the other Shvatim, that we know that the Medrash tells us that in the merit of the names of Israel, the entire host of heaven and earth exist. because the name of a person expresses its essence. And we know that there are various names that every person has, the one Hashem gives him, that which his parents give him, the name he's called by his friends, and above all, the one he earned from himself. Which means that some are endowed directly by heaven, and some of our talents and skills are hereditary in environment, but the most significant are those that come by virtue of developing and actualizing one's potential. And this is what the Medrash means, that the names of the sons of Israel, the entire host of heaven and earth, exist. It's when an individual has the ability to develop and perfect their own individual potential, that is the step, first and foremost, that brings to the final redemption. When every individual can be able to live up to their name, to be able to live up to all the qualities endowed from heaven, and all the qualities given by one's parents, and the environment around one, and able to use it to perfect oneself, l'shem shemayim, for the sake of heaven, so such a person is well on their way to bringing the Mashiach that one step closer. And we know that there are really two ways Mashiach can come, our rabbis tell us. The Gemara in Sanhedrin can come based on a pasuk in Yeshaya, either be'ita or achishena. It can come at its right time, or it can be brought closer. If Klal Yisrael deserve it, so then we can push Mashiach up. It doesn't have to come at the deadline, so to speak, at the case, but rather we can bring it way before. We can bring it this very moment. And therefore, when the Medrash says that Yaakov observed the perfection inherent in the names of his children, there was no chait, no deficiency in their potential abilities, hence there was no need for Mashiach to carry until Kates. And that's why the letters Kates do not appear in their names. What Yaakov Avinu saw in Bikesh Yaakov Legalos as a Kates, he wanted to reveal the end. He recognized, why do I need to tell them the end when Klal Yisrael have the ability to bring the end even closer? The word Kates, the final end, is not in their name because they can bring that Kates. They can bring that end time even closer. And that's what it means, the second Medrash, where the Kafanah reflected that if he told his children the king's mysteries, they would know this information only secondhand. But if he could inspire them to be careful in honoring the king, they would merit to become confidants of the king themselves and hear his secrets firsthand. And this is exactly what Yaakov Avinu was trying to do. The greatest blessing one can bestow is to enlighten another and acquaint himself with himself. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Rabbi Lev continues, man is precious having been created in God's image, and even more so for having been informed that he was created in God's image. Self-knowledge of one's abilities and talents, as well as one's shortcomings and limitations, is the greatest blessing. It is the means enabling one to realize his divine mission in this world. And Yaakov realized that the ultimate redemption depended on development of his son's potential, the potential inherent in their names. Rather than reveal the deadline for redemption, he opted to bless them with self-knowledge that could help them bring the redemption at a much earlier date. In this vein, knowledge of the capabilities they possess was itself a blessing. And that's how we are to understand how so many tribes are compared to animals. And to understand Reuven's blessing as well, is that Yaakov is doing is not blessing in the ordinary sense of the word of blessing, but rather blessing on the deepest level. If you are able to tell somebody who they really are, what is their core aspect, what shapes and molds their personality, what is their name, what is their essence, so you've given them the greatest possible blessing around, the blessing of self-knowledge, of enlightening oneself, and with that, an individual can be able to fulfill their potential, and in such a way, bring the case, bring the redemption closer. And that explains so beautifully how originally Yaakov Avinu gathered the children together to tell them the case. But with this new, deeper understandings, he said, let me tell you the way to bring the case even closer, the redemption closer, by blessing them with self-knowledge. With this in mind, understanding that Reuven's blessing is telling Reuven about who he is by essence, we can now appreciate the understanding of what Yaakov Avinu is trying to convey to Reuven. What indeed did Reuven do that he's compared to Pachas Kamayim, this impetuousness, this instability as water? So we know, as Rashi quotes here, that he mounted your father's bed and desecrated the one who ascended upon my couch, the Shekhinah. What is this a reference to? So it's a reference to a story that happened in many parshios earlier in Parshas Vayishlach, where it tells us that it came to pass, this is right after Rachel Imenu's death, while Israel dwelt in the land, that Reuven went and he lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard. And Rashi, based on the Medrash, notes, what does it mean that he lay with his father's concubine? So says Rashi, as a result of the fact that he disturbed the location of Yaakov's bed, Scripture treats him as if he had lain with her. And why did Reuven disturb and desecrate Yaakov's bed? Because when Rachel died, Yaakov took his bed, which had been regularly situated in the tent of Rachel, and not in other tents, and put it in the tent of Bilhah. Reuven came and demanded satisfaction for the insult to his mother. He said, if my mother's sister was a rival of my mother, should my mother's sister's handmaiden be a rival of my mother? This is why he disturbed the location of Yaakov's bed. It's clear from Rashi, based on the Medrash, that Reuven did not actually sleep with Bilhah, but rather what he did was to take Yaakov's bed out of Bilhah's tent and move it to Leah's tent. And as the Rav Nebenzal notes in Sichos L'Parsha HaShavua, it clearly is not kipshuto that Reuven actually slept with Bilhah. And we know this from the fact that when Yosef is about to be tempted by Mrs. Potiphar, the Medrash says, Yosef, one of the things he said to her is that my name will be on the future stones that the Kohen Gadol is going to wear. And if I do such a terrible sin, then I will not be allowed to have my name on the stones. And we know Reuven's name was on the stones. Clearly, Reuven did not do such an act because he would not have been worthy to have his names on the stones. And further, in looking at Yaakov's critique here of Reuven, he doesn't criticize him for Esh and Ish, for having relations, but rather for the Pachas Kamayim, for acting so quickly, for acting in an impetuous manner without thinking through that which he's done. It's interesting, the Ksava Kabbalah notes, almost as a support for Chazal, from the technical level of the word. The Ksava Kabbalah notes that there are two words to describe to come. You have the word Vayelech, and you have the word Vayavo. And throughout Tanakh, Vayelech is a concept of leaving from one place to another, and Ba is always a concept of entering. And that's why, for example, anytime Moshe Rabbeinu was told to meet Paro in the palace, it always says, Bo el Paro, come to Paro. But when he's told to go outside and meet Paro by the Nile, so then it says, Lech el Paro, go out to Paro. So therefore, when we take a look at our pasuk, when it says Vayelech Reuven, and Reuven went, so if it really meant that he came into the tent and had relations with her, it would say Vayavo Reuven, and Reuven came in. Vayelech Reuven is a textual proof that what he really did was he left this tent. He took out from Bilhah's tent the bed of Yaakov and brought it into Leah's tent. So it's clear that what Reuven is being criticized for is not an actual act of laying with his handmaiden, but rather it's to the critique of the way he acted so hastily without thinking it through, without understanding the larger picture. And it's interesting that Soloveitchik notes that Reuven's act of moving the beds had ripple effect and had major repercussions later on. We know that later on, when Yosef HaTzadik is being sold, and Reuven says, throw him into one of the pits. And then we find later, the brothers sit down and eat, they decide to sell him. And then Reuven comes back and says, oh, come out, the boy isn't here. And Rashi says, well, where was Reuven? Why wasn't he part of the sale? Because he was mourning for this thing that he did by moving the beds. And the obvious question is, that act of moving the beds happened 8-9 years previously, many years previously. So why is Reuven mourning for it right now? Why doesn't Reuven mourn for it when it happened? So explain to Soloveitchik so beautifully. When Reuven heard the way the brothers were talking and how callous they were toward their father's feeling about selling or killing a brother, Yosef, he recognized that what allowed the brothers this feeling of being so callous and having no compunction about killing off a brother, killing off Yosef HaTzadik, he recognized that it was for the fact that he acted against his father so many years earlier. That opened, so to speak, like a Pandora's box, that they lost that awe and reverence that they should have had. And by his act, he allowed almost this opening to happen, this chasm in the family that could then lead to many years later, the brothers not having a second thought about selling or killing another brother. Reuven's act, that act of acting so hastily, was an act that wasn't thought through, and that's what Reuven's being criticized here, of the pachas kamayim. Instead of thinking about it, instead of consulting with Yaakov about it, discussing with him, he acted this way, albeit for positive purposes, but in this respect, he lost so much greatness that was destined to be his because of this one act, because of the repercussions also that came from this act. What quality trait is being described here about Reuven that he lost so much? So the Shem Yishmuel here notes very beautifully. He says that we know, Chazal tell us, that Reuven had in potential to be the Bechor and the rights and the privileges of the firstborn, the Kahuna, based on the Pasuk here, that he's Yeter Se'et, greater by raising, and that's a reference to Nesiyus Kapayim, the raising of the hands in Birkas Kohanim, and he had the ability to have the Malchus, the kingship. That's also alluded to, as Rashi notes, in the phrase in our Pasuk, V'yeter Oz, and greater by might, which is the kingship, V'yitein Oz L'malko. Reuven had the potential for each one of these things. Why for these things? What's the common denominator? So Shem Shmuel quotes the Maharal that explains that the firstborn is in some way the cause of the other children in the family. For without his existence, there can be no more children. This means that the Bechor is a kind of middleman between the father and the other children, enabling the father to pass all his intellectual powers and abilities to his other children. And likewise, the Kahuna is also a type of conjunction. It's an expression of Das, and Das is a mean of joining the intellect to the emotions, connecting the spiritual and the physical components of man, which is really the paradigm of the priest. And Malchus, kingship, is also an expression of conjunction, where the king unifies a diverse nation to one cohesive people. And therefore, the common factor between these three gifts is clear. Each is an expression of a person's ability to unify some aspect of human life. Malchus is the ability to connect entities in the physical world, Kahuna in the emotional world, and the Bechora in the intellectual world. If it was intended from the outset that Reuven would receive these, what did he do to lose them? So says the Shem Shmuel, Rashi notes this as well, is that this aspect of Pachas Kamayim, the deeper root of this Pachas Kamayim, this unstable as water, is anger. He responded in an angry way at what he saw as an insult to his mother. And anger, says the Shem Shmuel, we know, is a character trait which causes dissent and breaks connection. Anger and dissent cause disharmony and disunity. And this is, of course, precisely the opposite of the aim of the gifts of Reuven. Thus, when Reuven displayed anger, the characteristic of disunity, he revealed himself to be an unsuitable recipient of the Malchus, Kahuna, and Bechora. Because anger leans to this aspect of disunity, and all three, by their very nature, are the concept of unity, we can understand by this one act, by this one display and outburst of anger, that Reuven lost all of these gifts which were destined to be to the eldest. And as the Shem Shmuel knows, just to close this idea, that those who got these gifts are people who represent this very characteristic. The Bechora went to Yosef, and we know Yosef, the whole concept of Yesod, his whole role in life was to be a connective force between the higher and lower world, and to prevent disunity. Aaron represents the man of peace, the man who does not get angry, who got the priesthood, and the Malchus went to David HaMelech, who's characterized by self-effacement, and someone who realizes his lowly position vis-a-vis God will never anger. For anger occurs when a person feels that things are not going his way. And therefore, the Shem Yishmuel concludes, we now appreciate just what Reuven could have been. He had the potential to be Aaron, a Kohen, Yosef, and David in one mighty person. But one error, albeit slight, ended this possibility forever. He could not maintain control of these three great gifts, given the slight character fault which he had demonstrated. Thus, they were taken from him and given to others. And we clearly have to understand, before continuing, that the Torah describes it in such harsh terms, Vayishkav, that he lay with Bilhah, because the Torah is judging Reuven, who is a tremendous tzaddik, like the way diamonds. Reuven, being as great as he was in potential, therefore acting in this way, the Torah is going to write it in almost the harshest of ways, saying what he did was really a terrible act, because Reuven was, we expected from Reuven that much more. The clear lesson that we learn from this, the model that Yaakov Avinu is teaching Reuven, is that one act done out of anger, done in an impetuous way, is an act that costs Reuven the greatest blessings around. And therefore, what Yaakov Avinu is saying to Reuven is for you to work on yourself and be able to develop within yourself all of these, understand, this character trait, be able to perfect it, be able to work on it, so that Reuven can grow and develop as a person. All of us have this Reuven-like aspect within us, where we react with anger, we react without thinking, we react with an immediate response, and this is something that all of us have to work on, all of us have to deal with. And we also know that in our own lives, we sometimes can forfeit some very special things because we do not act in a measured type of way. And as the Eli Shur, Rav Wolbe points out, he says, a kasan, one who gets angry, has to lichvosha kaso, has to conquer that anger. But that's still not enough. Because although you may be able to conquer your anger right now, it's going to flare up at a different time. One needs to get to the root. One needs to work on corrective measures to be able to counter this effect of the anger, this effect of reacting or overreacting so quickly. And that's the question I'd like to deal with now, is how do we work on ourselves on a practical level to be able to have a measured response to counteract this pachas kamayim trait that all of us have. So I think that there are, at least, I'd like to present two approaches how we can work on this on a practical level. Approach number one is to create for ourselves a safety net when we get angry. Rabbi Feuer, in the book A Lesson for the Ages, brings down from the Meiri that there was once a righteous king who had but one major fault. He was angered very easily. To overcome this tendency, he wrote three lines on a sheet of paper and appointed one of his servants to show it to him whenever he started to grow angry. The first line read, "Always remember that you're merely a creature and you yourselves are not the creator." The second line read, "Always remember that you are flesh and blood and will eventually perish." The final line read, "Always remember that there will be mercy for you in the future, only if you have mercy on others." This is one approach, where you set up for yourself some safety net, some safety guard, before you get angry, that you have a way to remind yourself to check yourself. Something Rabbi Feuer brings, it's a very beautiful story, is of a man whose father on his deathbed told him, "Whatever you do, never react with anger without sleeping on it overnight. Make sure that you have at least a night to think about it before you're going to do something out of anger." And this man gets married and disappears or leaves or travels for many, many, many years. And then he comes back and he surprises his wife, and as he's about to enter the house, he looks through the window and he sees that his wife is embracing this very handsome young man. And he's about to come in, dagger in hand, and kill both of them. And remember what his father told him. So he came in, and it turns out that his wife was pregnant when he left, that he didn't know, and this was his own son. And had he indeed not thought about what his father had said, and had acted in anger, so he would have killed his own family. And Rabbi Feuer brings that in the Gerut HaRamban, in the letter of all ages that the Ramban wrote to his children. So he begins off this letter after Shema Bani Musar, V'yicha V'altitosh Torat Imecha. He says, accustom yourself to speak gently to all people at all times. And Rabbi Feuer notes that you can take this phrase and divide it up into being a guide for ourselves. First of all, to naheg tamid, accustom yourself. Be prepared, he says. Don't let unnerving situations catch you by surprise. Before crisis hits, prepare in your mind how you like to react to trying situations. Second, ledaber benachat, to speak gently. Even in tension-packed situations, even when the atmosphere is charged with hostility, you have to speak gently. To all people, treat all people with equal respect, and at all times, react slowly and deliberately and speak gently. If we're able to train ourselves, and it's really a training, that we'll be able at all situations to respond with a gentle tone and respond to all people the same way, so we're working on ourselves to be able to deal with this trait of anger. And as Rabbi Feuer notes, it's a beautiful story where a disciple once hid under a bench in shul, hoping to observe the Chavetz Chaim conduct at night. When midnight approached, the elderly tzaddik appeared, opened the holy ark, and prayed to Hashem to help him overcome feelings of anger. It's something that takes years and years to work on. It takes a tremendous amount of tefillah. The second approach is really to work on the opposite aspect of what kas is about. And that's a Rav Wolpe note. He says, kas hu siyur tkuva pasul meshukatz. Anger is something negative. It's a negative reaction which is pasul. It's not good. Ein lebal kas habasis hanafshi asher mimenu yavo l'tkuva shkula. A person who gets angry does not have the ability to have a balanced perspective in reacting. Basis dehi, in order to be able to have such a basis, is savlanut, is patience. And he says, tiye efo avadatenu ke'eti lamdu midat ha-savlanut. What one really needs to do in order to counter anger, on the first level is to create our safeguards, to create our reminders, to prepare ourselves. On the second level is to really work on, in a very positive way, not so much when we get angry to see how we can stop getting angry, but if we can always focus in on how to be more patient as people, so we will come to be angry less often. And he notes, based on Rav Simcha Zissel from Kelm, Mi tain v'nitragel b'midat tasevel, who would only just accustom oneself to this midah? This is the root of all good midos, all positive levels that one can achieve in life, and it leads a person to menucha and inner peace. And as Rav Wolpe continues, he says, one cannot build a proper society unless one has this character trait of savlanut, of being able to be calm. And he says, what is savlanut? And it's a wonderful model and imagery for us to think about. Hasavlan domem mamash la'adam hanoseh masa kaved. A person with patience can be likened to someone carrying a very heavy load. Va'afshu kaved alav, even though it's very heavy on him, o mamshich lalecha bidarko ve'no nil'al seito. Although it may be very burdensome and very heavy, he'll continue to carry it. And he says, this is the imagery of relationships between people. Sometimes you'll hear things that aren't pleasing to you, or people will hurt you, or people will upset you. Instead of getting angry, feel like this is a burden, I have to carry it. In order to have this friendship, in order to go on, in order to have menuchas hanefesh, I'm going to carry this load that's found on my back. And we've all been in situations like this, where we are confronted with things that hurt us, that bother us, and instead of getting angry and reacting with anger, we have to be able to carry it. Have we not been in situations where, let's say, we bring a person a bottle of wine for Shabbos, if you're invited for a meal, and the person says to you, oh, don't you know I don't drink wine? So you feel terrible. Here you're giving them a present, and this is the way they respond. We carry that. person sometimes says things that aren't so pleasing, aren't so nice. We swallow it. How many times have we been in situations where we have to wait and there are things that are not to our liking? That's what it means to carry with a burden, to be able to accept. And says Rav Wolbe, Nidlamed Efo Liot Savlanim, we have to learn how to have Savlanut. And he suggests to take 15 minutes every day, the same 15 minutes, and to work on this midah. That whatever happens during these 15 minutes, I'm going to respond with patience. I'm going to have a measured response. I'm not going to overreact. And once we've worked on these 15 minutes, let's take another 15 minutes where we know we meet different types of people. And in that way, we know that during this time, whatever may happen, whatever people may say to me, continues Rav Wolbe. He says, if this is true in particular about our relationships with people, he says, Madur miyuchad kova latzma savlanut shel adam imamchei beito. It is for sure true that a person needs an added measure of patience with the people in his household. Because the people in your household you meet at all times, under all situations, and sometimes very trying ones, during the day and at night, and with this we have to invest more effort. And he says very powerfully, he's talking clearly, Rav Wolbe, to yeshiva boys, and he says, oftentimes a chassan will ask me, Ma aleihem latet et da'atam b'yom chatunatam? What should they be thinking about the day of their wedding? And he says, Ba'omdam tachet achupa, when you stand under the chuppah, he suggests to a chassan to think about, Yekablu al atzmam, they should accept upon themselves, Laseit et ol ha'isha, to carry the burden of the woman, Ad me'e ve'esim for 120, Bechol matzav, in every situation that they will have, and never to try to break out of this yoke on him. And he says, that is why, in Lashon HaKodesh, in Hebrew, when we speak about someone getting married, we say he is nosei isha, which literally means he's marrying a woman. But he says, Zeh bitui nifla, it's a wonderful expression, ki hu mamash tarich laseit et ishto, liyot tzovel ota kol yimei chayav. That's what he has to do. He has to carry his wife, he has to take that burden, and clearly works the other way as well, all the days of his life. This is an added level of savlanus, to be nosei isha or nosei ish, to be able to carry the burden of a spouse under all situations. And clearly continues Rav Wolbe, kamo savlanut tzrichim b'chinuch yelatim. Children in particular demand a tremendous amount of patience. And he says one should take an extra period of time every week and work on within one's household to have this added level of patience, particularly in the morning rush hour of the house, or the evening rush hour of the house, or our Shabbos rush hour, when we're more likely to fly off the handle, we're more likely to get angry. That's the time to have this nachat ruach, to respond gently. And we know that when we speak softly, the whole mood, the whole temperament of the house is a different aspect. The response that we need to have is to work on not only overcoming our anger, but to really focus in on what savlanus, what patience is about. Children need that patience. Children try us to our limits. We need to respond gently, softly, firmly, but they get a much sweeter message than yelling and then anger. And here comes perhaps the punchline. Says Rav Wolbe, Kidei lekabel musag vehergel b'savlanut, in order really to work on this, hayinu tzichin linamei b'savlanut im acherim, we have to work on being patient with others. Aval anu zekukim l'savlanut gam klapei atzmenu. One cannot forget that one not only needs patience with other people, patience within one's family members, but it's equally important we need to have patience within ourselves. And this is so important when we have such a desire to continue growing and to be able to accomplish so much spiritually in other realms, and we're not able to accomplish as fast or as much as we want to, and we get to a point of depression, we get to a point of frustration, and a person needs to have savlanut, patience with oneself. This leads us back to one final idea with Reuven. The Medrash says that when Yaakov rebuked his older sons, he had waited until now before doing so, right? The Pasuk says that after Reuven did this act, it says, Vayishma Yisrael. Yaakov heard, but he didn't respond. He waited till now, and he explained, the Medrash in Dvarim, Rabba says, in the Sifrei in Dvarim says, Reuven, my son, I did not rebuke you all these years so that you should not leave me and stay with my brother Esav. And Rav Nebenzal in Sichos L'Parsha Shavua asks a very obvious question. Is there a havamina, is there a thought that Yaakov Avinu was afraid that he would go over to Esav? We know that Reuven's name, when he was called this, the Medrash says, Re'u ma ben b'ni uven chami. Look at the difference between my son and my brother-in-law. Esav, when he lost the Bechorah, tried to kill Yaakov. When Reuven lost the Bechorah to Yosef, he tries to save his life. Esav is told, catch me tzayin, and make sure it's not from that which is stolen, Yitzchak Avinu tells him. Reuven goes out and takes from the hefker, the dudayim. He's so careful about not stealing. Is it possible when there's such a difference between Reuven, his very essence of his name, and Esav, that it's possible that he would go over to Esav? So says Rav Nebenzal, perhaps shot in this medrash is, not that he'd actually go over to Esav, but rather, Im Reuven yitbayesh mitochat Yaakov, if he would be embarrassed, tipatach etzlo netiya l'kivun Esav, he might open an imperceptible thought that would want him to go to Esav. Netiya ktana ma'ot. It's a thought that Reuven may have, you know, life is really tough here. I make one mistake and I blow everything. One act out of anger and I lost three major gifts. It's much easier on the Esav side of the world. And he says one may not even be able to put one's finger on it. It may be a fleeting thought. But from this himself, Yaakov is afraid. And continues Rav Nebenzal. He says, we know the story when the Chafetz Chaim was on a train and traveling back to his town, to Radin. And there's another man on the train, and they begin talking, and the Chafetz Chaim asks this man, why is he going to Radin? And the man says, I want to see the gadol ador of the Chafetz Chaim. So the Chafetz Chaim responds, you know, he's not such a gadol ador, I know even greater tzaddikim. And the man gets very flustered, and he says, no, he is the greatest gadol around, how could you say such a thing? And begins to berate the Chafetz Chaim for insinuating that the Chafetz Chaim wasn't such a great gadol. And when the train reaches the city and this man finds out that he was berating the Chafetz Chaim himself, he felt terrible. And he was besides himself. And the Chafetz Chaim says, no, 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 don't apologize. You taught me a great lesson that you can't say Lashon Hara about yourself as well. So says Rav Nebenzal, Kishem Shasur La Adam L'Saper Lashon Hara L'Atzmo, just like a person shouldn't speak Lashon Hara about himself, Kach Ulai Gam Asur La Adam L'Ochich Et Atzmo. It also may be that a person has to be very careful in rebuking himself. If Yaakov Avinu is afraid of what may happen to a person when rebuking others, we also have to have that chashash to be susceptible of what will happen, suspect of what will happen when we rebuke ourselves. And says Rav Nebenzal, a person could have this thought, of, you know, the Mishabur wants me to do this, and the Mesuah Shasharim tells me to act in this way, and this Sefer Musar tells me to act in this way. After all of these things, a person can say, the tension's too much, I can't handle it. And he continues, Adam Shabal Atzmo B'drisho Mefuzarot Sheinam Lefi Kocho. If a person is going to expect more that's beyond his ability to do, Alu B'mukdamu B'mukhar, sooner or later Lishvor Atzmo, you can break yourself. In the beginning, it might be an imperceptible thought. But from that moment, that thought, you know, this is too difficult. When that crack opens a little bit, you don't know to what extent it may open ultimately. And if one has this feeling, this is too difficult, it can slowly over time expand into, let me throw all this off, let me go to the camp of Esav. And that is why, although clearly a person has to spend time in examining oneself and in working on oneself, one cannot be so difficult on oneself. One has to have, as Rav Wolbe spoke about, savlanut, one has to have patience with oneself. One has to build oneself up and say, look how much I've accomplished. Look what I am doing. Look where I have gone. And let me use that as an impetus to move myself even further and drive myself even further. Because if a person is just going to be critical of themselves at all times, and how come I haven't achieved, and why aren't I like, and how come I can't do, so a person's going to come ultimately to breaking oneself. What we learn from Reuven, from Yaakov rebuking Reuven later on, is that you have to be so careful in rebuking others, because you don't know how they are going to respond, and their response could ultimately break them. And that also holds true of ourselves, how when we rebuke ourselves, we have to be so careful that it doesn't break us. And perhaps the final point, and then we'll summarize, it says from Nebenzal, is that when this attitude of looking at life on a more optimistic note, rather than constantly berating oneself, and having this type of patience with oneself that one can build from the past, he says is so important in the way we interact with others as well. As Rav Solomon says number of times, he says that our faces are a bor b'rishus harabim. It's like a hole in a public domain. The way we look to others, it's the way other people are going to respond as well. If we walk around all the time depressed and sad and feeling down on ourselves, it's going to have an effect on the people around us who are going to be depressed and down. But if we have a positive view and we look with our faces shining and with this optimistic, and we give off this optimistic attitude, so we will then have this as a reflection of the people around us, and we can impart upon them as well this positive attitude. And we ourselves know people who walk around with a smile at all times. We want to be with these people. These are people whose smile is contagious. It draws us in with their warmth. And people are depressed and sad all day. These are people we want to stay away from. They always are like carrying a chip on their shoulder. This is the lesson of the savlanus, of having patience with oneself. That yes, you can critique oneself, but do it in a positive way. Do it in a way that's going to build oneself up, not to create the beginning of this break that can lead to a much, much larger break. And its effect not only on ourselves, but on those around us. And therefore, what I think we've seen by Reuven's bracha, that is indeed a bracha, the bracha of self-knowledge, the bracha that can bring about the Mashiach even earlier. And that's the pachas kamayim, that you've acted in this hasty type of manner. You've acted out of anger. And what Yaakov Avinu is saying to Reuven is, look what you've lost. Yeter seif v'yeter az, look what you've lost by acting this way. Work on this midah, work on this character trait in order to perfect yourself. And this is really a call for the Reuvens in all of us, where we act hastily, that we need to create our own net to save ourselves, to take a deep breath and count to five before we react in an angry way. And more importantly, perhaps, or just as important, is to work on savlanas, work consciously on patience. Patience with others carrying the burden. Patience with family members, with a spouse and one's children. Find a time, 15 minutes a day, that this is what we're going to work on. We're going to work on not reacting in anger and have a reserved response, a measured response. But benachat, in a gentle tone, that's how we're going to respond to things around us in those 15 minutes. And to understand just as important it is to have this feeling toward others, to have a gentle response to oneself. Because just as Yaakov was afraid of Reuven's response when rebuking him, we need to fear our own response when rebuking ourselves. So although it needs to get done and we have the time period of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Elul to do it, most of the time we have to build ourselves up on what we've accomplished and use that as our push to move forward, to continue on in our Avodas Hashem. Because the way we view ourselves is the way we are going to grow. We are going to develop. We're going to feel that optimism that we can accomplish, we can grow, and this is the effect it's going to have on others around us. This positive attitude is going to be contagious, and people around us will want to be with us, and it will be an impetus for them to grow and to continue likewise in their service of God.